Stop the press, Scott. Stop the press because we need to add more paper.
We do, and everybody should be taking advantage of this. I hope you are paying close attention. Ultra Running Magazine. You've heard us talk about it. We have told you that this is the Bible of ultra running. Comes out 10 times a year for a very low price, and guess what Carl and Erica are doing now?
They're doing something very trail is what they're doing.
They are. Ultra Running Magazine, I think, was started back in 1980.
Okay.
Back then, the subscription price for a year was $10.
Mm.
So Carl and Erica, 35 years later, have decided, let's make that the same price for this coming year.
Kind of like a magazine aid station.
So if you have not subscribed to Ultra Running Magazine, you can go to their website, ultrarunning.com, and you'll see it there. You can subscribe for $10. That's a dollar an issue, Don.
Scott, we're putting this on a podcast. Are you certain this is true? Because that's kind of unbelievable to
me. We may have to edit it out afterwards. But if you are already a current subscriber, it says that you can extend your subscription for a year for $10.
Wow.
Which means you and I need to get online.
So if you haven't subscribed, subscribe.
Exactly. There's no reason why you shouldn't. You got $10 in your pocket. Go do it.
Simply go to Trail Runner Nation. Go to our partners page and click link right over, and it's like you're standing at the print shop. It's like that, Scott. Just bring $10.
Okay. Green Tea Tailwind.
Oh, Scott, you're singing my song. I just love green tea.
It's springtime in the Northern Hemisphere, and there's nothing that just quenches your thirst like a little bit of Green Tea Tailwind.
You know what I'm liking a lot, Scott, besides green tea and mandarin orange and the lemon and the...
My favorite's the berry.
All of those is the fact that Tailwind is legit now. I mean, I've seen them everywhere. I see people carrying it in bottles. I've seen it in stores. I see...
Races.
Races are using it. I mean, it's like they've arrived. There comes a point when all of a sudden you know it's real, and they've done it.
And this is not a marketing trick. It wouldn't be in all these places if it didn't work.
Well, people will determine what works and what doesn't.
This has been a grassroots effort that has been exploding across the United States and across the world because people are trying it, they're finding that it works for them, and they're telling their friends.
Well, when it's time for me to fill my bottle up or my hydration pack, what I do love about it is it just mixes and dissolves effortlessly.
You never have any of those clumps or when you're sucking on the bottle or the hydration hose or your bite valve. All you're getting is liquid, man. You're not getting any gritty gunk.
What you're really getting is the right amount of electrolytes and the right amount of calories to fuel you for the rest of the way. Drink it with confidence and trust Tailwind Nutrition.
Go to our partners page and link on over and try it.
Ladies and gentlemen of the wide, worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast.
This might be one of the most interesting podcasts ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing. There's a bunch of like old brothel hookers like buried out here.
No, I've listened to your podcast for many years, and it's yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I do own my own bar. every Friday morning on I Run Far, we open up and open up the taps.
You record this, aren't you, Freeman?
I get everything. Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Scott Warren, and we're with Matt Fitzgerald. We just found out that he has he's written a lot of books, Don.
A lot.
On fitness, nutrition, athletics. We just found out that he's branching out and starting a new series of romance novels.
Romance novels? Do tell, Scott.
I don't know anything about them. We'll have a podcast about it later.
As soon as it breaks out, we'll do it.
But
Romance Nation.
21 books. The latest one, we did a podcast on it. It was called How Bad Do You Want It?
You got to love that title.
Which was a lovely topic and one of a very favorite podcast of mine. Hey, Matt, thanks for joining us.
Great to be back.
Matt, by the way, Matt can be found at mattfitzgerald.org. where you can see he's a coach. He has training plans on there that you can purchase. There is one thing that I saw on the website recently that I didn't know what it was, so I want you to explain this. It is called the DQS app. And I read that the first time. I go, why would I want an app to DQ?
Ah, yes.
And so I didn't delve into it. I thought, I don't need an app to DQ. I can do that on my own. What is DQS?
Yeah, so it stands for Diet Quality Score. It's a instrument that you can use to assess the overall quality of your diet. And I first introduced the concept in my book, Racing Weight. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things where it needed to be an app. I mean, because it's, you know, you get points and lose points based on eating good foods and bad foods. And I was just crying out to be turned into an app. But I'm a technophobe. And I took forever to get around to it. So finally, there is the tremendous built pent-up demand for a DQS app has been satisfied with that.
So let me ask you, Matt, did it help you define your diet or become more aware of what was going on with the app? And because I'd be very conveniently forgetful, like that bag of chips, I didn't really reach into that thing. So that would happen to me, but I think the app probably holds you accountable.
That's exactly it. There was a famous survey done by AAA a long time ago where they asked people to rate whether they were above average, average, or below average drivers. And 90% of respondents said they were above average drivers. and that's stretching the definition of average. You know, so people tend to look at themselves through rose-colored glasses. And there's actual real science showing that we do the same thing with diet. Like, we remember that stalk of broccoli we ate for lunch the rest of our lives. But yeah, the handful of chips we grabbed out of someone else's lunchbox.
the Reese's peanut butter cup that we picked up off the ground and ate.
Yeah, so it forces you to just confront, you know, get honest about how you're really eating, and then you can start to take steps to improve the way you eat.
So where do we download this app, and is it available on iPhone and Android both? What's the availability?
Yeah, currently it's only available in the iOS version, iPhone, but the Android version is coming, and probably just, you know, you can find it through my website, learn a little bit about it, and then there's a link to download there.
Fantastic.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we were anxious to talk to Matt about is he is an accomplished runner and triathlete and just an amazing athlete. And I'd like to think that we had little influence on Matt, mm-hmm. but this year he ran his first 50 miler
mm-hmm.
at the American River 50.
He came last year and spoke at the banquet about how bad do you want it. That was kind of in the making. He was writing
the
that
book
at the
wasn't
time.
Even published then.
Right.
I don't think.
And then just being around the crowd and the start of this race made him because you ran a little piece of it, didn't you? Didn't you jump in with somebody as a super
pacer.
Raffle drawing, and you were a pacer?
No, everything you said up to that point was true until that. I did not. I stumbled outside of my hotel on race morning and watched people go by. But I did not run a step of the course on that.
So besides the double dog dare that Don and I threw at you, what made you think I want to try this?
So your influence cannot be overstated. It's really true experience.
We'll pay you later.
Yeah. Yeah, that pushed me over the top in terms of wanting to do an ultra and specifically really wanting to do that one. But there were two things in place before that. One was I'm getting slower at all the familiar distances. Mm-hmm. I train just as hard, and then my time for a half marathon, marathon, just not as good as it was when I was younger. So that sucks. But then also, you know, the popularity of ultramarathon running and trail running is just exploding. And I hear from more and more athletes who will say, you know, hey, Matt, can you coach me to a 50K or a 50 miler? And by the way, have you ever done one yourself? And I felt like, you know what, for credibility, I need a better answer to that question when I get it. So that was part of the formula, too.
So we just thought, you know, a fun title and a fun discussion, especially since Matt is just fresh off of Boston.
Can I ask him a few questions about his experience, or do you want to get into that with our topic?
Well, I think the topic will probably bring it out. But if you have a question,
well,
Scott,
I just want to know, you know, maybe an overarching statement is you've had a lot of experience of these other distances. What were your expectations going into running a 50 miler, and did the expectations ring true, or did you learn different things that you were not expecting?
Yeah. So yeah, let me be perfectly frank in a way that will perhaps lower my reputation in the eyes of some of your listeners, but I thought I was cherry picking. You know, I thought, you know, it was a funny thing. When I spoke at the banquet at the American River 50 the prior year, I was trying to make some point, and I wanted to use the Boston Marathon as an example. And I asked for a show of hands among the people sitting, you know, listening to me. I said, how many of you have run the Boston Marathon? And nobody raised a hand. Nobody. And Julie, the race director, said later, it's like, you understand, we run ultras because we're too slow to qualify for Boston.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that was sort of my mentality. It's like, you know what, you know, because I can be woken up in the middle of the night on any night of the year, forced to wear combat boots and run 26.2 miles, and I'll qualify for Boston. That's just, it's not, qualifying is not a problem for me. So my attitude was, when I run this 50, I'm going to destroy these wheat muffins. I'm just going to crush them. That my expectation was highly inflated. I went in, I'm being very honest, I went in with a fair measure of arrogance, and I had a comeuppance. You know, I got what was coming to me. I was humbled by my first ultra.
The trail gods, we joke about it, but the trail gods are out there, and they can sense arrogance, and they will crush that arrogance and grind it into the dirt that you are running on.
Yep. So let me ask you, what mile did this trail god appear to humble you?
I'm going to say 12.
All right. 12 left or 12 into it?
12 into it.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. The sun had barely come up.
Actually, you know what? To be honest, I'm going to say almost from the first step, really, in terms of like when I started making rookie mistakes and having my plan shredded and my expectations thrown back in my face, was almost from the gun, really. 12 miles was just at the point, that was the point where I just started to get scared.
Well, that sets up the topic perfectly. Go ahead, Scott.
No, go ahead. We'll get into the rest of this. I have a lot of questions about his trip.
And I think they'll come up through this discussion. So the title of this podcast, if we can somehow take it from this phone and actually put it up onto the website when we post it, is a 50-mile run 2 times harder than a marathon? With the subtitle, so what's the difference? And so each of us have been tasked with...
Is that what the title was? I better write that down.
So I got to hear from you, Scott.
Okay, thanks.
So each of us wrote down and kind of sketched out just a few bullet points of the difference between a 50-miler and a 26.2. And for those of us that are out there that have run marathons and that are scratching their head and wondering, what does a 50-mile feel like? And can I do it? Am I runner enough to go take this on? And then for those of us that have run the 50 or greater and look back at the marathon and say, yep, those guys are on it, or no way, they missed the boat on this one. So I think it's fun for the entire audience, those that have run it and not run it, to take part in this discussion.
And I think Matt is perfect for this topic because he did run American River 50. That was in April?
Beginning of April, yeah.
Beginning of April, and he just ran Boston just last week or 2 weeks ago.
So both are fresh.
He has a unique perspective. I need to throw a caveat in there if people don't know. I've never run a marathon.
A road marathon, but you've run the 50K distance.
I've run 50K distance on trails, but so I've never run the marathon distance on a road.
You can fake it.
It's because I'm way too slow. I can't qualify to enter a marathon.
Can't even do that?
No.
All right.
So I want to ask Matt, out of the gate, in the last month, you have run your first 50-miler, and you've run the granddaddy of them all, Boston Marathon again. Is the 50-mile distance two marathons stacked on top of each other?
Yeah, you know, I had 24 hours or something less maybe to think about this since you guys, you ran the topic by me. And the short answer I came up, I stayed up all night thinking about this, by the way. So okay. Thanks for that. The short answer is yes. I'm going to say yes. Long answer is it's not twice as hard in the sense that at any point you're suffering twice as much, at least not in my limited experience, but you're suffering just as much twice as long. and that effectively makes it twice as hard.
So let's throw some bullet points around here. Scott, you've got a bunch of them. I have some listed here. I know Matt stayed up all night. We disturbed his sleep. And so
I have one that's related to that.
Let's go. You start, then Matt, then I'll go. We'll
okay, I have one that's directly related to what Matt just said, and that is, I better just read it rather than trying to paraphrase. Don't resist the pain. Relax and accept it. I think in shorter distances, if you have a blister, if you have a cramp, or you're having some kind of a physical or mental issue in a shorter distance race, you can try to resist it or ignore it. I think in a 50-mile distance, you have to accept it and deal with it versus ignoring it.
And I would say that's a good word. You have to deal with it. You need to do something to stop it because it could be there for many hours if it comes on too early. And so I like the way you have to see a problem and solve it and not just endure it.
Right.
Yeah. Good one, Scott. Matt, any comments on that?
Totally agree. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously when you get to the marathon distance, you're already at that level spending a fair amount of time with your discomfort as well. So I see relaxation and acceptance being important versus like an 800-meter, you know, two laps of just pure murder around a track. Mm. Then it's, you know, forget resistance, but yeah, totally agree.
Good. Your bullet point, Matt. Go ahead. You spend all night? Do you have anything?
Wait. I missed the question.
Oh, no. It's your turn to submit one of your thoughts.
Okay. A bullet point. Now we're talking about specifically the difference between marathon and 50 mile.
However you want to say it.
Or something running related. Yeah. We don't care.
Yeah.
Well, I did want to pick up on the point one of you geniuses in that room mentioned problem solving, because that was a huge difference in the experience for me where, you know, early on in the 50 mile race I ran, a bottle fell off my belt. My fluid belt.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have a total short course racer's mentality. So I'm just like, screw it. You know, I'm not stopping for that. But, you know, so I started to continue and then I'm like, what are you thinking? So then, you know, I stopped and ran back the wrong way to pick it up. You know, it was just like that all day long where just something, the kind of thing that just doesn't happen in a marathon would happen. And then it's like, okay, I have a decision to make. What do I do? So that was just another layer of the ultra experience that I was not accustomed to, and I don't think is a major part of, you know, marathon and below. So, you know, problem solving.
Yeah, you're carrying a few more things on a 50 mile because you're going to be out there. What mid-pack in, I'm just going to throw some numbers out, like mid-pack in marathon coming through at 4 hours in the finish line. Mid-pack at a 50 mile, more like 9 and 10 hours, right? And so you're spending a lot of time out there. So you're bringing a few more belt and gear and different things that you're carrying.
I think it also allows you to enjoy the experience possibly a little bit more than you would if you're running a shorter distance.
That's good. It's not rushed.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I ran the Boulder 10K, which is one of the biggest 10Ks in the nation. And I was surprised, I guess I shouldn't have been, I was surprised at all the empty cups that littered the road because somebody didn't have the time to chug their water and find a receptacle to throw it away. They're just all over. It was just surprising to me.
Mm-hmm. Good. All right. Ready for mine?
I'm ready for yours.
Okay. Mine is, the wall doesn't move. It's still at mile 18. So, yeah, there's, I found that in the, if you want to run fast right from the start, you will stumble just like you will in a marathon. You're so, only so much in you. And if you decide to do a lot of turnover, that wall is still at mile 18, will take care of you. And there's a lot of miles after that first wall. So you do not want to trash yourself, because suffering from 18 to 26 is a lot different than 18 to 50.
Did you find that same case, Matt?
Yeah, and that's sort of what I meant when I said that you're not necessarily suffering twice as much, but you're suffering twice as long. So that's what I found, is that, you know, I started to feel like, man, when is this thing going to be over? pretty much at the same time I would in a marathon, you know, but I just had that much longer to deal with it. So yeah, that was very true to my experience.
One of the things that I found is that there's more than one wall in a 50 mile or greater. You can expect to go over a couple of them, and you can avoid them if you're strategic. But if you are not, and you're just out there on automatic pilot, you are going to run into one or two or three.
Yeah, that's true. Moving on.
On to you.
Let's see here.
That's what happens, Matt, when you have too many to choose from. See, I just have a couple, so it's really easy for me. I go to next.
You know, I wrote one down that wasn't on my list when we were talking about this. That's very different. I think it's different.
Uh-huh.
And that is pooping.
Yeah,
I got Matt to laugh.
That's on my list, but you said it a little differently.
How did you say it?
Well, I said bathroom or restroom or, you know, things like that.
I was trying to be concise.
And you were.
But I think that's an issue where
it's a luxury on the trail to be able to wherever, whenever. It's not a logistical challenge. How much should I drink before the race starts? Where is the bathroom? Will that lady see me in her yard? There isn't any of that. On the trail, you just are free and at will, and it's nice.
Yeah.
Sorry to
step on your... No, that's exactly what I was thinking. I think it's very different where you don't have to search for that little porta potty on the race course.
And stand in line. How many people are behind it? Is it red or green on the little handle? Is it open or not?
All you need to know is how do I get around the backside of that bush and get off the trail?
And is there any poison oak?
That's true.
Matt, do you have any comments about
poison? Do you have any experience with that on a 50-mile run, Matt?
Well, I'll tell you what. So, you know, my attitude in a marathon is like even stopping to urinate, you know, in a porta potty for, say, that takes 20 seconds is an unmitigated disaster. Like, no way am I going to lose those 20 seconds. So I put a lot of thought and preparation into ensuring that that never happens, that like I am not excreting anything but sweat when I run a marathon. And then, yeah, in this, the 50 miler, you know, kindergartners are taught to say little bathroom and big bathroom.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, for the first time in any race experience I've ever had, I had a big bathroom break during the 50 mile. And that again was another shock to me. I'm like, are you kidding? I thought I took care of this.
I want to know, what was your strategy going into the 50 miler? If your experience is, I'm going to do everything that I can to not have this happen. Did you go in with that same attitude? And then were you surprised, or did you go in thinking, this is going to happen, I'm going to be prepared? Did you have some wipes in your fanny pack?
No, believe me, I thought it was impossible. I would have staked money that there was just nothing in me that could come out. So I just wasn't worried. I knew I would have to pee. You know, I've done Ironman triathlons. You know, you pee on the bike, you smell like a homeless person by the time you finish. It's part of it. So yeah, I expected to pee, and that's all I expected.
you know, there's no bigger mistake than not to bring those wipes that you're talking about, Scott, because that could not only be inconvenient at the time, but you could pay for that mile after mile with chafage in the Great Canyon of the body. You do not want
the Grand Canyon.
You do not want that. That is some that's some endurance you don't want to practice. Ouch. So the weight of a couple of wipes, well worth it.
Yeah.
All right.
I think whose turn? Is Matt's turn?
Yeah, you did pooping.
Yeah, I did pooping.
How can we forget?
Yeah, so big difference for me was other people. So just, you know, a direct comparison between the American River 50 and the Boston Marathon. So, you know, Boston, you know, which I ran, I guess it was 10 days ago or something. I got stuck. I've done it twice. The first time I had a really good qualifying time that put me close to the front, you know, so when the gun goes off, I don't have to, you know, elbow through a lot of people. This time I was a little bit further back. And so I spend the first 5K, even 4 miles of the race, just it was like a form of road rage, just like angry at everyone, just like all of you people die so I can run the tangents. You know what I mean?
In Boston Marathon, can you say on your left and do people pay attention?
No, absolutely not. I mean, you can say it, but people will not pay attention and you might just get a gratuitous elbow for your trouble. So yeah, I mean, my whole attitude in Boston was other people are the enemy. They're an inconvenience. They're annoying. And then, you know, later in the race, because I ran a well-paced race this time. So in the final miles, I'm mowing people down. Mm. And it's just like, there's this like sadistic glee, you know, cause they're still my enemies. Now they're not in my way. I'm just picking them off one by one and just loving it. So it's just like this sort of adversarial relationship to all the other people in the race. In the American River 50, totally the opposite for me. And again, unexpected, something I didn't put 2 seconds into thinking about beforehand. But, you know, I'm maybe 4 or 5 miles in the race when I end up just in a small pack with two other people. And we ended up running the next, I don't know, 12, 14 miles together. And then one guy dropped off and I saw another guy for most of the rest of the race. And it was like this band of brothers. And so it was like a total, it was a cooperative kind of thing. This like feeling that we were helping each other along. It wasn't get out of my way. It wasn't, I got to beat you guys. So that was great. And also the aid station volunteer interaction was, you know, cause you linger a bit, you know, usually in a marathon, I do try to aim for the trash receptacles with my Dixie cups. I try. But, you know, I'm just dashing through the aid stations. And if I don't make it in there, fine. And I do try to thank the volunteers. But in the 50 miler, it was just like, I don't know, I just absorbed so much from those people. So just as the human experience was very different, but kind of in an appealing way. It's one of the things that would make me want to come back and do it again.
Yeah, you know, and sometimes you don't even learn people's names all the time because you're keeping track, but you know red shirt guy, you know, you know, ponytail girl, right? Everybody has their own name.
That's right.
You can identify because you see them in front of you. They may pass you and you really don't get a chance to strike up a conversation about names, but you have that in your head. And then you look for them after the race and you can, I want to introduce myself to ponytail person or whatever so you can talk to
them. Well, you know, I have a little comment that was on my list that is very well related to this, and that is you meet friends while you're running a 50 miler,
right?
We've gotten podcast guests on this podcast from people that we've met at a race,
right,
running with them for a few miles.
Uh-huh.
I think of Orsi, the barefoot guy.
Yep.
Tony?
Terry.
Terry. Mm-hmm. Terry Orsi. You know, that's somebody that you met running AR-50, and you ran a few miles with him, and he's running barefoot.
You got
to know
him. He didn't have any
shoes on. He started talking to him and said, you know what? We need to have you on the podcast. So you made a friend. And I can't think of one ultra that I have run where I haven't met somebody new and had a fun conversation with them.
I want to pick up on one of Matt's comments, and that's a good one, Scott, is that Scott and I, we had the chance to announce the finish at that race. And mm-hmm. What you'll find is that people don't come along individually. They come through in groups.
They do.
As if they've become that band of brothers that you're talking about, Matt, and they all finish. They finish together. And they don't try to take that last, you know, 25 yards and really try to race to the finish. They come through together. You know, we're a team on this. We've been working hard together for the last 12 miles. You helped pull me through that tough spot. We're finishing together, pal. And, you know, it's cool to see that. It makes it harder for the announcers. We would appreciate you spacing yourselves out. You know, real long names, give us a little more space.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
If we could do anything with this podcast, that's what we need to be able to do.
We need spacing.
It's spacing at the finish line.
Okay, I think I'm up.
You're up.
And the one that my next one on my list here is you get crew and you actually get to see them. So many times at road marathon stuff, that's hard to race a person and get around town. And how long are you going to see them? Long enough for them to grab a Dixie cup and miss the trash can? That's about it. But here, I mean, you pull up a chair and you're changing somebody's socks. There's all kinds of interaction that you get, and it's acceptable and appropriate and appreciated. So it's cool to be a crew, and it's even cooler to get crewed. And that happens at the 50-mile distance, or it doesn't happen at the shorter distance. Any thoughts on that, gentlemen?
I wanted to say, what about when you see your crew at mile 44? What? Isn't that cool? Because you know that the thing, you have it in the bag at mile 44. You're thinking, I can crawl for 6 miles. And so at mile 44, especially on your first or second, sometimes on your 10th, you see your family, and it's an emotional high.
You realize this isn't out of your day.
You get to share it with them.
Yeah. Any thoughts on crew and aid station stuff, Matt?
Yeah, it's interesting. So my parents live in Rhode Island, within easy driving distance of Boston. So when I went out there to run the marathon, you know, I let them know I was coming, and they said, "Oh, you know, we'll come in and try and see you." And I said, "You know what? Don't bother. It's don't even bother. It's like this. It's a gigantic hassle, and it's just what you were saying, Don. It's like you may pick your son out of the crowd. You may not. If you do, you'll see him for 8 seconds, and then you know for what? You know, you've just, you know, the logistics of getting around an event of that size in an urban center, forget about it." I said, you know, I'll come visit you after the race. We'll do it that way. So, well-drawn distinction between the two types of events.
I have one that's somewhat related.
And it is your turn. So
it is my turn.
Perfect timing.
And it's pacing, pacers.
That went right by me, Scott. Good one.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I don't even think is allowed in a marathon, but in a 50K, I don't think any 50Ks they have them.
That I'm aware.
But 50 milers, often there are pacers that can join you and help you along the finish of a 50 miler, and of course the 100K and 100 milers. There's and 200 milers, Don. 200 milers, so you can have a pacer too.
More than one.
I think that is a critical difference. So how great is it to, at mile 30, to get a training partner or a friend or someone that you know or someone new,
a stranger,
and have someone help work you through to the end of the race? I think that's one of the cool things about a 50 miler.
Did you have a pacer at all, Matt?
You guys are giving me lots of great ideas for having a better experience in my second.
Are you taking notes? You may have to go back and listen to this podcast, Matt.
Well, here's the funny thing is for the longest time, I thought the race was on Sunday. It's a Saturday race. And so I have a brother. Both of my brothers are runners, but I had one who was going to be visiting the area from where he lives in Oregon. He said, "Hey, I want to pace you." I said, "That would be great." And then, well, like days before the race, I realized it was on Saturday and he was actually going to be on the road at that point. So there went my pacer. So I raced without one.
Yeah, definitely an advantage, I think, you know, to have somebody else kind of take over some of the responsibility of watching trail markers. And that, since that's my turn coming up.
It's not your turn. It's Matt's turn.
Oh, dang it. That was a good transition.
Go ahead, Matt.
Go ahead, Matt. Then I hope you don't take mine now.
Okay. Now I really hope I don't take yours. But course specificity factor was a huge takeaway for me. So part of my arrogance coming into this race was, if I'm fit enough, the course doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Mm. I'll just dominate it. I remember writing a profile of the great duathlete from the 1980s, Kenny Souza. And he was, you know, it's a running cycling hybrid sport. And I remember him telling me that for the longest time, he rode this big, fat, heavy, old technology bike, because his attitude was, "I'm such a good cyclist, it doesn't matter what kind of bike I ride." And then randomly he got an opportunity to ride one of his competitors' bikes, and he was like 2 miles an hour faster on it. And he was thinking, damn.
Wow.
Shoot. So when I got out running the American River 50, I thought, boy, you know, I am nice and fit, but I sure wish I'd spent a lot more time training on terrain like this. Because I felt like I couldn't even use all of the fitness I had because I was worried about where to put my foot next. And I wasn't good at it. And I fell five or six times I face planted. And some of them were kind of bad falls, the kind you're not entirely sure you're going to get up from. Yeah, course-specific preparation is a huge difference.
I had that on my list of tripping. Right?
I put proprioception on mine.
Yeah, just because on the road, you can just kind of forget about what's happening below your knee because the next step is it's either on paint or not on paint. You know, there's not a whole lot of change in terrain, but you have to really be aware on a trail because everything's there.
You know, and what else about the hills? I mean, you hear about Heartbreak Hill, and I've seen the elevation change in Heartbreak Hill. And then you look at some of the elevation change in like this 50 miler. I think one of the big changes or differences between the two is training and preparing for hills and knowing how to walk and power hike.
Yeah, that was never on your list to do any power hiking, huh, Matt? That as a racer,
not on my list. No, good guess.
But a good strategy. Even some of the fastest finishers put in some strategic hiking, a fast hike.
Yeah.
When it comes
to the last 3 miles of the American River 50, you got to be Superman not to do a little bit of walking there.
or all of it. I've been there before.
The entire 50 miles or the last 3 miles?
The last three.
Okay. Yeah, I remember I was fortunate enough to have a pacer with me at the end, and they say, come on, we can catch some of these people. And I said, are you kidding? They're having a great day. Why would I ruin that? I was just so tired that the hill had taken it out of me.
Trying to find an excuse not to.
So why should I go up there and try to break their day? They're doing so awesome. Okay, my comment that I'm glad and fortunate that Matt didn't take was trail marking. That's another logistical item that you need to keep track of. Because you're running on the road, you've got seven or eight people ahead of you, and just follow them on that next left-hand turn or those cones or that police officer that's waving you to come through and stop in traffic. That's pretty nice. But we don't have that on the trail. You're watching an orange ribbon, and don't run on the red ribbon because that's another race
that was last week's
race.
That was a mountain bike race two weekends ago.
So paying attention to the different turns, and then as you're running, how many times, I don't know if this happened to you, to Matt, I know you came out and ran the course a few weeks before to get familiar with it, but when you're running and you just say, please, please, show me a ribbon. Am I on course? Am I off course? I'd hate to have to come back. And I'm going to have to climb this hill that I'm going down. I hope I'm on. There's a ribbon, and you're so happy. It's like, I love that ribbon. You just want to just embrace it.
I don't think I have ever met an ultra runner that has run even a few races that has not got off course.
I think
that's a key attitude or frame of mind that you need to go into a race like this. I remember the first time I got lost, it was on a 50K, a really hard 50K. I was spent and I was hurting and I took a wrong turn and I ended up going back down to the river.
Ooh.
And once I got to the river, I just almost started crying because I knew that I was off course and I knew I had to go back up to get to the fork in the road that I missed. And it was, you have to learn, at least I did, that you are going to get off course or there's a good chance you may get off course if you're not paying attention, especially, you know, near the end of the races where your mind's not really with it.
Yeah, and that's where pacers come in nicely because you can turn over the race navigation because you've been paying attention for all those many miles, and now hopefully your navigator is on course.
So here's the one thing that I will say about that too is a lot of times when you're in that little small group, you kind of follow where the other person's going.
Yeah, yeah.
In this case that I was telling you where I took the wrong turn, three people followed me.
Ooh.
And so then not only am I upset at myself and a little disappointed and bummed that I have to, now I have to apologize to these three other people that I took the, hey guys, I came down to get a drink. I don't know what you're doing down here, but I came down to get a drink.
That's where that song Cry Me a River came from, right? All right. Who's up?
I think I am. I want to talk about gear.
Okay.
What kind of gear is different in a 50-miler versus a marathon? And first of all, I think water bottles or a hydration pack, if you're using a hydration pack. You got to carry water. I guess you don't have to, depending on how the race is structured with aid stations. But most, I can't think of any 50K or 50-miler I have run that I didn't have at least one water bottle with me. And I don't think I've ever run any shorter distance with any kind of hydration.
Well, those water bottles, handhelds, provide a secondary purpose, and that those
airbags.
Are airbags. When you fall five or six times, Matt, did you notice the bottles, if you had them in your hand, were conveniently placed for impact?
Of course, I did not have handheld bottles. That would have been nice. I had mine clipped into a belt that did me no good, except I had to scramble and try and find where they went when I did a triple roll.
Okay, I have got to say this because I have avoided some of the pitfalls that Don and another friend of ours, Jeff, when they got into ultra running, because they were marathoners and they got into ultra marathoning, and they did all sorts of gear and training mistakes. And I learned from that. I was very lucky to learn from that. But the one thing that I should have learned that I didn't was I also had a hydration belt that had like five water bottles that were like 1 ounce each or something like that. And I looked like Batman. and I don't know whether I see too many multiple race people that still carry a hydration belt in an ultra marathon.
I remember pulling up because Scott and I both raised our hand because we wanted to make
is that
the
what
comment.
You're going
to
say?
That's exactly it. I showed up to the aid stations, rookie guy
with six 1-ounce bottles
with all caps taken off, and the caps no bigger than a soda cap that you take off to drink a soda. And I'm holding all six of them, and this guy's trying to fill it with a pitcher, and he's looking at me like, dude, what? Is this your
rookie,
first race?
Yeah. Rookie.
So I might as well have been wearing a sign instead of my hydration belt, is what you're saying.
Yeah, you could have put the big R on your shirt.
it was easier than a sign because we didn't have to read the letters.
There are some good hydration belts out there, but I have become a handheld water bottle guy myself too. I don't necessarily like the hydration packs personally, but one of the reasons is I don't know how many times I have taken a face plant and had a water bottle or two in my hands, and it's completely saved myself because you land on those and you don't get your hands all scraped up.
You get a face full of whatever you're drinking.
Yeah, you may scratch your knee too. Oh, you actually? I've had the top pop off.
Yeah.
So gear. What other types of gear? What would you say is a Matt? What would you say from your first 50 miler? What piece of gear do you wish you had?
Well, butt wipes.
We came back to that one, huh?
I'm compiling a list.
Baby wipes, baby.
Yes.
Go ahead. If you're still cranking your gears, I've got one to submit. Otherwise, go ahead, Matt.
No, you go.
Tanning stuff, not tanning.
Suntan lotion?
Yeah.
Sunscreen. There we go.
Yeah, because you're out there a long time, and not just in the morning and done before, you know, the middle of the day. You're out there through the heat of it, and not having some on the back of your neck, your ears, your head, it can really be a piece of gear that you need.
Yeah, you know, to flip this around, I'll give you an item of gear that I did use that I wouldn't use next time.
Oh,
how about that?
That's great.
Yeah, and that would be my iPod. My iPod.
Oh, really?
I mean, I think the idea of running 50 miles in a beautiful natural environment with, you know, rock and roll blaring in your ears is borderline sacrilege in the first place. But I sometimes like to run with music, and I just thought, you know what? It'll be just something that will you know, give me a maybe an extra 0.5% to get me through this thing. So I thought, you know, I'll give it a try. So I get halfway through it, and you know the famous section of this course when you've got mountain bikers whizzing at you down the same narrow single track trail.
Yeah.
And one of my falls was actually not a fall, but a full-on dive out of the way of a mountain biker. I was, you know, within centimeters of I was pretty close to ending up in the hospital on that one. And after that, I got up and I was listening to my music. And I thought, you know what? This is a safety thing. I better turn this off. So if I can't see them coming, I at least maybe can hear the squeak of a, you know, a chain ring before they come around the corner. And it's funny. So I turned the music off and it was like, you know, when you've gone on a real long road trip sometimes and you're listening to music the whole way, and you get to a point where you just shut the radio off and there's this like, boy, silence. Doesn't that feel good? And that's what I had halfway through the R50. I shut off the music and I just wished I had done the whole thing that way, just, you know, just closer to my natural environment and get to experience it more.
One of the other things, Matt, the third use of a water bottle, a handheld water bottle, I've seen Don use, and that is when somebody comes whizzing by, it gives you a little bit of ammunition to throw at the back of their head, because I've seen Don throw his water bottle at someone before.
You know what? You must be imagining that. I would never, ever do that, Scott.
Yeah, I remember you throwing, and I remember some words, too.
it's fortunate that I'm the one that edits this, and no one will ever hear any of that.
Okay.
So, hey, so back to your iPod comment, I have carried on 50 and above distances an iPod through the entire race, but never listened to it, but would not have done it without it. I tucked those little speaker things, the earbuds, speaker things underneath my collar in my shirt, and they're just there, and they're just like a security. I know it's there whenever I need it. And there's been sections of races that I'm just like in the dump, and I said, okay, I'm going to put a little music in there, and it changes the dump. It's still a dump, but there's music playing in my dump. And it's nice. And so I like to have it. It is truly a security for me, and I would not race without it. Although when I'm engaged in trying to run and listen to all the decision-making process, the music is a distraction to me.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And so I just, but having it there is a security.
Matt, what's on your playlist?
Oh, you know, everyone says I like all kinds of music, but I'm that guy who actually does. I have everything from sort of African pop music to, after David Bowie died, I went kind of through his kind of lesser known tracks and put some of them on. I did have also, I don't know what it is, but I had Prince on there too. They're dropping like flies. Mm. It's like the curse of my playlist.
I hope we're not on it. Yeah. You don't have Trail Runner Nation on there, do you?
Don't download our podcast, Matt.
Are either of you musicians by chance?
Don is.
I play the guitar a little bit. So I
play the radio.
Since I like all kinds of music too, I'd literally put all the tracks together and just merge them together and listen to everything at once.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's intense. All right. Well, good thing I edit the podcast.
Yes. Hey, one other piece of gear that I think is different in a 50 versus a marathon, and that is the embarrassing fanny pack or a equipment belt. Even though I don't carry my hydration belt anymore, I don't think, very rarely will I even go on a run without my little Nathan fanny pack thing. It's not like the big bulky one that people used to wear in the 80s, but
so you're an advocate of that.
Oh, absolutely. You got to carry your stuff. I have to have my phone with me, have to have some ibuprofen, some S caps, a couple goos, and that way I don't have to carry them.
Yeah, well, in your hand.
Yeah, in my hand. Yeah.
Those S caps would melt.
Yeah.
Did you use any sodium at all on this run? Did you need to? Was it something that you were confronted with?
No, I kept it pretty simple for nutrition. I carried some gels that, of course, had electrolytes in them, and then otherwise used what was offered on the course. I am a sports nutritionist, as you guys know. I write a lot about the topic, so that's one area where I don't make a lot of mistakes. Though I'll tell you this, I misjudged. I imagined an aid station between miles 29 and 38 on this course. I just told myself there was one at 34 miles. There is none at 34 miles. So I got, I actually ran 5 miles without any nutrition whatsoever. The slowest 5 miles of the course, getting close to the warmest 5 miles. And I got pretty darn thirsty and ended up flagging down some hikers and grabbing one of their water bottles and just pouring it all down my throat, saying thank you very much, and went on my way.
Awesome. Awesome. Who's That's up next?
Matt is.
Oh, good.
Okay. Well, you know, shoot. Can I mention one other item?
Yeah, please. Scott's favorite topic is gear.
I did compression socks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the ones that make you look like Pippi Longstockings.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why I wore them, because I was terrified of poison oak. And I thought, you know what? Whatever they may do for circulation or whatever, like, that's coverage. You know what I mean? Like, it's your shins that are most likely to get all, you know, infested with that stuff. So I thought that was maybe the one thing that I did that was smart.
Did you like them? Did you like it wearing them?
Yeah, you know, I wear them in marathons sometimes. I find that they may slightly reduce kind of the accumulation of muscle damage that occurs in a longer race. That, you know, maybe one of those tiny little things that adds up to make a difference. Who knows? I kind of like them. I don't like them on warm days though, because then it heats you up a little bit. And it got kind of warm out there, and I wasn't too happy about that. But I didn't end up with poison oak, so who knows? Maybe it was a wash.
Speaking of gear, and 26 miles isn't as long as 50, glide or some type of anti-chafage device. Did you experience chafage in a new area that you didn't expect in a 26-mile run?
I did not. Plenty of scrapes from the falls. What I do, before any race, actually, I got this from my triathlon days, when you're leaping off a bike barefoot and shoving your bare feet into shoes and running. So what you do is you slather a layer of petroleum jelly on the inside, all around the inside of your shoe. And if it's you think, oh, you're going to slip all around. Well, no, you're not. Not if the shoe fits. So that's one of the things I use to avoid foot type, like blistering hot spots, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. There's all kinds of places that show up that are new. Underneath the arms, where they're running back and forth on you, the nipples can end up becoming a bloody mess. And you can really, like that utility belt with 6 1-ounce bottles that are surrounding it. If you see somebody coming down the road with 2 red areas on the front of them, you go, man, that's the first time he had to experience that.
No doubt.
Throw some tape on there next time. I'm up? Okay. I'm going to talk a little bit about just the emotional hurdle of the 50-mile and the conquest when you're done. And the same thing can happen with a marathon. And I finished my first marathon. I could not get over the curb to get back to the car. I mean, it was just as far as I could physically manage and even complete. And then when somebody said, well, run a 50, I thought, just no way, just impossible. That's twice the distance. I couldn't even get over a curb, and you want me to run another, you know, 20.
You want me to run back.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. And so I think that enough people around me, and I've seen enough people complete the marathon, but I hadn't seen that happen in the 50. So I think the emotional accomplishment for me, and the handheld of, and not the handheld water bottle, but just the fact that was completed, really was an emotional windfall for me, a real hurdle, and I really appreciated that about that distance. So not to say that the marathon isn't an accomplishment, it is, but I thought after barely making a marathon that just a 50 mile was out of the question until I saddled up and did it.
You know, this is a good question for Matt, since he's done both these distances very recent. My experience is being completely spent excuse me, at the end of a 50K and just thinking, I can't take another 10 steps.
Mm-hmm.
Doing the same thing at a 50-mile distance and being done and just going, there's no way I can take 10 more steps. And then doing the same thing at a 100-mile distance. And I think it's kind of I don't know what I'm trying to say. Matt, did you find the same thing that...
Yeah. Well, what I'm trying to
make Scott's statement for him and then follow it up.
It's relative. It's all relative is what I was trying to say.
Yeah. whatever you were trying to say, you made me want to say something in response. So job done. So, I mean, you know, I always race with a leave it all out there mentality. So it doesn't matter what the difference is. I'm sort of trying to do the same thing, you know. So, you know, when I get to the finish of a race of any distance, I want to look back and say, I couldn't have gone any harder. I couldn't have run another step at, you know, at the pace I was trying to run in that event. And so that's what a successful race is to me, is just saying, you know, like, that's it. That's all I had to give. And so, yeah, when I ran that 50 mile race, I mean, that was so true in a different way than I had ever felt before, where, I mean, I was a wreck. I was destroyed. And that felt really good. I mean, that's what I'm in it for, is just to know that I couldn't have done it any better. All kinds of things went wrong. I had, you know, certain regrets. I don't know if I want to use that word, but it made me want to like fix my mistakes, but still I knew I had done the best I could on that day. And then, you know, actually in Boston, you know, 16 days later, I ran that race and it was kind of warm and it's a tough race. It's not a course that suits me. I'm terrible at running downhill, but same deal. You know, I finished that race. I should share the photo of me running down the home stretch. I always, when you can get the photos from that are taken of you during a race, I always purchase the one where I have the ugliest face because it's like, it's proof. See, I did leave it all out there.
Hey, Matt, can you send me that picture? Do you mind us using that as the podcast photo?
I would pay you to use that photo.
I believe I've seen that on Facebook. I think you posted it. It is a face to be seen. You left it all out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but it's deeply satisfying. So yeah, I know what you guys are talking about.
Do you have another one, Scott? Do you want to?
Let's do one last one.
Okay.
Mine is going to be nutrition. And I know there's a lot of runners out there that will do a 50-mile distance just on goose and some kind of electrolyte drink or water. But for me, and I think for a lot of the people and in the ultra community, is you got to get to the point where you can eat real food instead of just relying on these sports nutrition products like a gel or something like that. You know, to go into an aid station and have a cheese sandwich, or I know Don loves the boiled potatoes with salt and some M&Ms and something like that. I think that is one difference that, frankly, I really like.
Like Sunny Blende says, it's a what's her famous line?
It's a
eating contest eating with running in between or something. Yeah.
What about you, Matt? Did you said that you stuck with the gels the entire time? No, you said you partook of the buffet, didn't you?
I did not, actually, no. Okay. But, you know, part of what I wanted to do in this whole experience of, you know, preparing for and completing this 50-mile race was to learn something about nutrition and experiment a little bit. So I did, I played around with some, you know, carb-fasted runs, and I wanted to train my body to really be able to run long distances without much of any nutritional support, not that the idea was to do that race, you know, and hamstring myself, but I didn't want to feel like super dependent, you know, on like, oh my goodness, if I don't take in X many calories, I'm doomed. So like, for example, I think maybe 4 or 5 weeks before the 50 miler, I ran a marathon, the Napa Valley Marathon, on water, just, you know, nothing but water, and also did no carbs for 12 hours before the start of the marathon, just to make it hard on myself.
What was the outcome, Matt? What did you experience?
You know, and that's actually why I did this, because I didn't want to presume what would happen. And I ended up being completely surprised by what happened. I didn't feel any difference whatsoever. I wasn't trying to run fast. You know, the idea was just to challenge myself to cover the distance under those circumstances. But I felt fantastic the entire way. I ended up, you know, when I finished the race, I kept running. So I ended up, you know, running all the way back to my hotel, and then finally, after I got back to my hotel, had my first carb since dinner the night before, and I thought, wow, I would not have thought I could do that. And so it really gave me a lot of confidence going into the 50 milers. You know what? You don't have to try and force calories down to the point where you're hurting yourself. Like, you know, fuel yourself, be smart about it. But it was really nice to know that, just, you know, I didn't have to turn it into an actual feast on the move in order to survive the thing.
I like what you've done, and I think that that's something important, especially when you can't keep PRing all the time. You know, when I look at, my abilities as they start to decrease a bit, is there's a lot of things you can do with a race. It doesn't always have to be just about that clock. We can change the way we manage ourselves or the nutrition and just start watching and running for other reasons too. So that's a cool experiment of one that you've did.
Yeah. And that's why, I know I'm going to run until I can't, because you never stop. It never stops taking you places. You can't keep getting faster forever, but you can keep learning. Running can keep taking you new places. And that's why I love it now as much as ever.
Mm. Good point.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I think it's Matt's turn.
Okay.
Last thought.
Yeah, I'll put stress and anxiety out there. It's when I finished the 50 miler and looked back, put it this way. So yesterday I was in downtown San Francisco, driving in downtown San Francisco. If you've ever done that, it's nightmarish. You're just, you're gripping the wheel, you're white knuckling, you're worried about running over, the cyclists, the
messengers,
the messenger bikers. Yeah. All the streets are one way. You start to turn the wrong way down a one-way street. You're like, your navigation tells you to turn one way and it's like there's construction, so you can't. And then, it's just like it's stress. You're just trying to get from point A to point B and you're stressed. That's what the 50 miler was like for me too. Cause like you're stressed looking for that next ribbon. Like, when's the last time I saw a ribbon? Am I even on the course? Or, oh my goodness, I've run out of fluid and there is no aid station at 34 miles. And, it's just, or, oh my goodness, I fell again. And, just one, oh my God, I have to poo. It's just one thing after another where I just felt like I'm just like stressed. I'm not only am I working hard with my body, but I was just anxious and stressed the whole way through, which is, it's just part of the challenge and part of what makes it a different kind of challenge than a mere marathon.
Well, on that point, as you were listing some of the things to be stressed about, one of the things that I find myself stressed about is, especially on the single track, is am I holding up somebody behind me? And out on the road, I don't even worry about that because people can just get around and I can kind of be in my own space, in my own bubble. I don't worry about that. But on single track, you really have to have your ear behind you to make sure that you're not impeding someone's strong point where they're really feeling good and they really want to move and you don't want to impede their progress. So I think that's a difference, almost a negative of traffic, of keeping flow.
I've known runners that have been anxious about snakes. They're just worried that there's going to be a snake on the trail. So that's what that's all they're worried about or thinking about is snakes. Which I still have not seen a snake on the trail.
Oh, yeah, I have.
I have not.
You're not paying attention, Scott. They're there.
I'm walking on them. Okay, Freeman, bring us home.
My last one is drop bags. Who would show up to a marathon with three or four drop bags, change of shoes, different shirt perhaps, and on and on, your favorite picture of an
inspiration. Where do I put my drop bags?
Yeah, where do my drop bags go? So I think that's definitely something different.
And did you use a drop bag, Matt?
Did not. Again, that's another element of my short course mentality. Just like drop bag, that's only going to slow me down. So
would you the second time?
Probably not for 50 miles. Anything further, I think so. Yeah.
Okay. So what happens when you run your 50 mile is you look for another 50 mile or 100K or 100 mile. Which direction is your gaze right now? Are you turning back to marathon only, or are you intrigued and wanting to go practice some of your newfound skills and lessons on the trail?
Yeah. So I think next up for me is, I'm also a triathlete. So sometimes if I haven't been swimming for a while, I get the urge to go back into triathlon mode. So I think that's what the summer is going to be, but I really want to do another 50 miler. I think that'll be my next ultra. Just to be very honest, I'm still very competitive in nature. And I would like to find a course that really suits what I consider to be my strengths. Knowing where to put your foot next and not avoiding falling would be a weakness for me. So I don't know. I'll scout around, and I'm going to win the next one. You heard it here.
Yeah, well, that's good. what? Where do you think
you could make your own 50-miler, Matt? I've won plenty of those.
Yes. A hilly course? Are you? And you said you're not a downhill runner, but you know a lot of ascent.
I like up. So you know, hills don't scare me. Heat doesn't scare me. Trails, or just dirt or whatever. It's just the really technical stuff that I'm like Bambi on ice skates on that stuff.
You're in the Bay Area over there in California, up north. The Marin Ultra Challenge, the Marin Headlands over there. What a beautiful place to race. And
that's pretty technical, though, isn't it?
There's a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah, but roots and rocks and...
Well, you know, that's... you don't have to disclose everything about it. I'm just trying to get into the darn race. Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that it was a great experience. You walked away with about three races worth of lessons, which is nice. You know, and lessons don't come as fast as they do on your first one, but that's what's great about this sport. You know, you get to go learn and then you get to practice, and there are other people around you that are happy to assist and give you guidance and give you their experiences. And you're right, Matt, the culture and the people, they're just the best, and they're comrades and they're not competitors, right, trying to race you to the finish. And people do come together in groups, and somehow through the human side of it, there's strength in numbers that we've heard that over and over, but there truly is strength in finishing when they group together people that pull through the parts that are hard for you. All of a sudden, these two or three other runners that are with you help you keep cadence and pace through that hard part, and then pretty soon you're pulling them, and you become a real efficient machine, and it's super awesome, and one of the things that keeps bringing everybody back.
Amen.
There's a lot of pay it forward, I think. You know, you've been in a bad spot and you know what it feels like, and there's some payback also. So I that's one of the things I really like about this sport.
Remind us again, Scott, where we can find Matt. I know you've got all that written down.
MattFitzgerald.org.
He's also on Twitter at
FitRider. Matt FitRider?
At Matt FitRider.
Yep. Awesome. Instagram as well.
I'm not. I think I have an account, but I'm not active.
You're kind of like we are on that one. And how about coaching? If people want to get in touch with you, do some coaching, how do they access that? And what kind of coaching are you doing?
Yeah, it's all right there on my website. I offer a custom training plan design service, and I'm also a coach for a new initiative called Team Iron Cowboy.
I love that.
Yes.
Scott, being from Wyoming, that's right up your alley.
Yeah, I love that. Well, Team Iron Cowboy.
You're going to have to tell us a little bit about Iron Cowboy. What's the cowboy part of this thing?
So it's a guy. His name is James Lawrence. He goes by the moniker Iron Cowboy. He did 50 iron distance triathlons in 50 states in 50 days last year.
Wow.
Yeah. He started an online coaching, like a subscription based, like online training community, and I'm part of it.
Awesome. Hey, that's good stuff. Well, we appreciate you coming on, and
it's all good stuff. Good conversation.
And I'm going to go check out that app that you were talking about, my accountability. What am I really eating, and see if I'm, how bad I'm cheating without even letting myself know it. Like when you're looking at yourself in the mirror, you only look at a certain angle with the light down, so you have in your mind's eye that you're just as good looking as you used to be.
I have one of those carnival mirrors in my house that make me look good.
Stretch you out? Or
it stretches me out. Makes me tall and skinny.
Good. Well, mine puts a beard on me. I'd really look distinguished. I got to line myself up just right. Matt, thanks so much for short notice and coming on here and telling us part of your experience and help us fill in the gaps.
And if you have not read How Bad Do You Want It, you need to get that book. It is actually a very good book.
So thanks,
Matt.
Thank
you, guys.
All right.
Thank you.
Now go out and run.
Mass.